Hello, I would like to tell you a story about the power of art and the power of people, and how, when the two unite with shared aims, the seemingly impossible can be made possible. My name's Holly Grange, and I'm Exhibitions Curator at Leeds Art Gallery. The story I'm going to tell you today is about how a stretch of land in Leeds was secured for the working people of Leeds and remains to this day one of the best loved and most visited green spaces in our city. But where am I talking about? Here are a few quiz clues for you. Let's see if you can guess. If you live in the northeast of the city, this might be a good place for you to walk off your Sunday dinner. The second clue, in the 1980s, if you lived in Leeds, you may have been lucky enough to see Madonna, Bruce Springsteen, Genesis, or U2 play here. And clue number three, there is great scenery on offer here, including flower gardens, a pond, and plenty of wildlife. This wildlife includes 30 species of butterflies and a community of lemurs, which I'm told the collective noun for is a conspiracy of lemurs. Any ideas? Well, you may have guessed it, the place in question is Roundhay Park. Roundhay is one of the biggest city parks in Europe, covering more than 700 acres, which is 2.8 kilometres squared of parkland, lakes, woodland and gardens, which are owned by Leeds City Council. The park is one of the most popular attractions in Leeds, with nearly a million people visiting each year. But travel back in time nearly 150 years ago, and the park as we know it today was merely a collection of mansions and grounds owned by the wealthy gentlemen and ladies of Leeds, industrialists and aristocrats, who preferred to keep their view of the landscape unsullied by the general public, and the land around their houses distinctly private. The year was 1871, and the particulars for over 150 acres of land had come up for sale in the neighbourhood of Roundhay, formerly the family seat of the Nicholson family. The sale particulars extolled the virtues of the area, saying, "Roundhay is the most charming suburb of Leeds, presenting a magnificent landscape, unsullied by the smoke of the town, broken by hill or dale, adorned by rich plantations and fine parks, and studded with gentlemen's seats and homesteads." They stated that the land and property would be of interest, and I quote, "not only to gentlemen seeking residencies, but also to capitalists who may be desirous of profiting by its development." However, what they hadn't bargained for was one man having a radically different opinion of things. This man was John Barron, Mayor of Leeds, who declared, "Here we have an estate which would make an ideal playground for the people of this town. Future generations will remember us with gratitude as they stroll along the pleasant walks and enjoy the ease and shade of the trees." With one eye fixed on these future generations, John Barron became embattled in leading a hard-fought and bruising campaign to acquire the land for a public park. Perhaps we shouldn't be surprised when we hear of Barron's backstory that he was very much someone to plough his own furrow and was not easily swayed or dissuaded by the opinions of others. He was very independent of mind and spirit. For example, when he was just 21, he left home and sailed to Hull, boarding the new railway to Leeds to look for an opening in this bustling industrial town. Just 10 years later, and he was found running his own ready-made clothing business. Energetic and dedicated, he was described as like a spinning jenny in constant motion. As his business expanded, he moved his home to Chapel Allerton and his factory to Park Row. Then in 1877, he designed a new factory and warehouse on Park Square. If you've ever visited Park Square, I'm sure you would definitely have noticed the building. Its eye-catching, fantastical facade with minarets and parapets looks like it's been magically transported from a Moorish Spain into the middle of Leeds. As the local Thoresbury Society states, this imaginative building was planned with care for his employees. Barron had a reputation for good conditions and fair pay, unlike many of the sweatshops and the wretched wages in the clothing trade found elsewhere in the city. It would seem by all accounts that John Barron was someone who cared deeply about the working man and woman, and crucially about their health and well-being. Perhaps it's unsurprising then that it was Barron that spearheaded the campaign for a city park in Roundhay that would cure the malaises of the city folk whose lungs were increasingly clogged up by smoke and smog from the factories. Barron and the Leeds City Council's appointed barrister, Mr. Denison QC, summed up the argument for the park thusly. Populations of this kind should have some place where fresh air could be obtained, where the people can see green trees and green fields, and if they could enjoy a sight of water, so much the better, because in Leeds trees absolutely refused to grow. They had their pores choked with smoke from morning to night so that they could not breathe, and in order to give the idea of the effect of smoke from the factories, one might observe that in the surrounding countryside, even the sheep are black. The well-heeled residents of Roundhay, nicknamed at the time the Roundhay aristocracy, argued that the mayor and city authority had no right to buy such land and presented a petition to Parliament against the purchase. One of the most outspoken individuals was James Kitson, a famous locomotive engineer. 6 years earlier, he had purchased Roundhay Lodge and he couldn't face the idea of working people being allowed access to his perimeter fence. Kitson feared that the opening of the park would lead to, in his words, unseemly behaviour. A rather amusing poster lampooning the Roundhay landowners was pasted throughout the streets of the town, which read, "Citizens, the Commons of Leeds assembled in their town hall, decide to buy Roundhay Park. The aristocrats of Leeds petition against this purchase. But which is to win the day? A score of private gentlemen in Leeds and 300 private gentlemen in the hereditary chamber, or a town with a quarter of a million inhabitants and the elected representatives of a nation of 30 million. A special act of Parliament was required to permit the purchase of the land by the city authority, since it exceeded the £50,000 limit they were allowed to spend on any single asset. With the auction looming and time being of the essence, Barron and some other wealthy supporters stumped up the £139,000 to buy the land, with Barron placing himself in a hugely precarious financial position by remortgaging his own house in order to do so. But purchasing the land was just the first step. Barron now had to persuade the Parliament to pass the Act. This was before the days of PowerPoint presentations, drawn up to show the vision of landscape architects and park designers, so Barron had to find a way to paint a picture and illustrate to the great and the good of Parliament, some of whom may have never visited Leeds, the beauties of this potential park. Eventually, he commissioned John Atkinson Grimshaw, a self-taught and then very famous local artist, to produce three paintings that would serve as his visual argument to seduce and persuade. In the 1970s, Leeds Art Gallery acquired one of these three paintings, which you can see here, which is titled Tree Shadows on a Park Hall, Roundhay. Here you can see the silhouette of a single figure walking along the cobbled street alongside what could be a perimeter wall separating the land from the people. Arching above the figure are large trees, their dark shadowy profiles contrasted against the almost acidic green sky, captured during the gloaming or twilight, when the shadows seem to elongate and it's possible for the light and shadow to play tricks upon the eye. This work was characteristic of Grimshaw's output at the time, in that it was painted at dusk. These nocturnes, as they were called, were what he became most renowned for. They were highly detailed and often combined topographical accuracy, sometimes using photography as an aid, with considerable atmosphere, which led to the famous American artist James McNeill Whistler commenting, "I considered myself the inventor of nocturnes until I saw Grimmie's moonlit pictures." Popular support was rallied by holding large demos and gatherings in the lead-up to the Leeds Improvement Bill reaching the Select Committee. Hundreds marched through the streets, waving banners and singing songs accompanied by brass bands. Over 50,000 people walked to the park on Whit Monday, with twice that number making the long journey the following day. Then, at 3 p.m. on the 8th of June 1972, the band of the 4th West Yorkshire led the Great People's Demonstration through the streets, showing that the taxpayers of Leeds were definitely behind the scheme. The event was timed to perfection and the bill was passed. Before I leave you, I'd just like to introduce a special guest, our very own local Leeds bard and comedian, Mickey P. Kerr, who is going to read a poem written in 1872 after the acquisition of the park for the people of Leeds, which was written by John Middlebrook, a local Bramley poet. Over to you, Mickey.
Hurrah for Baron! What do you think about me now? Three cheers for Baron, up with cap and shout it again, hurrah! His game is, lad. Come, what's to think be what he's done today? It doesn't matter much to me, bud, but somebody'll have to pay. It's grandest place that I never saw out, lad, a place so nice. That shakes the head, it's true, but I know it's a longish price. But then it's nought for Leeds, they can rise it any day. Well, can they? Well, it's right to me, bud, somebody'll have to pay. Hey, up for Leeds. I don't care how big debt it hats on. We've got a rattling park at last. All thanks to thee, Sir John. It can't be bet all England through. At least so judges say. And it ain't all that can't be bet. There's a rattling debt to pay.
Thanks for that rousing recital, Mickey. So the COVID-19 pandemic this last year has underscored for many of us that these close-to-home parks are crucial to communities' quality of life, particularly for those who do not have private gardens that they can access. During this crisis, people have turned to their parks like never before for fresh air, exercise, meditation, solace, and a much-needed break from the stresses and anxieties that life throws at us. Roundhay Park will have fulfilled this role for many Leeds residents this past year. In 1871, Baron was incredibly forward-thinking in that he really understood that everyone should have access to the joys of nature for the mental and the physical health benefits, and also that this access to green space should be a part of everyone's daily existence. And I hope you agreed that it was worth the rattling debt to pay. I hope you've enjoyed this tale of the founding of Roundhay Park and how the power of art and the power of people came together to create real political and social change for the people of Leeds. Thank you for listening.